behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Vingan here with you on Wednesday evening, joined by my friend and co-host for this week, the one and only Robbie Stanley. Hello, Robbie.
Hello, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing better than the Nashville Predators. They lost again last night to the Calgary Flames, 4-3 in regulation at home. A brief stop at home before they head back out on the road for a couple of games. The Predators now 0-5-3 in their past 8 games. That is tied for the second longest winless streak, as the NHL likes to term it. A winless streak includes losses in overtime or a shootout. But it is their longest winless streak in more than 11 years. You have to go all the way back to April of 2013 to find the last time the Predators went winless in 8 consecutive games. Now, Robbie, I believe I heard you on the morning show say that in just terms of losses of any kind in a row, this is the longest stretch in franchise history.
It's tied, yes.
Tied for the longest stretch. I assume with that stretch that I referenced in 2013.
Yes.
All right. So the Predators not making the right kind of history. And look, if you want to be encouraged about some aspects of last night's game, you can. They scored 3 goals. That's something they haven't done since beating Winnipeg on November 23rd. So they actually crossed the 3-goal threshold. They scored all 3 goals at 5-on-5. That's the first time this season they've scored 3 goals at 5-on-5.
Yep.
Jonathan Marchessault, 2 goals last night at 5-on-5. But at this point, it's really hard to come up with a lot of positives as the Predators' winless streak reaches 8 games.
Well, I mean, they've played 29 games and they've won 7 of them. And that kind of sums up.
Well, when you put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad. I mean, I actually thought to begin the game last night, obviously they scored the goal, but I thought even beyond that, like, I saw some things that I liked from Forsberg, Stamkos, Marchessault, that trio. And that trio just kind of got thrown together because Gus Nyquist missed the game because of an illness. So you put those 3 together on the top line, and I thought Stamkos playing up the middle, he kind of creates the first goal, right? Like, he's got the wide drive, gets the puck to Forsberg, gets it back from Forsberg, finds Marchessault in the middle of the net, and it was a really pretty play. Like, it was one of those plays where they finish it, and you're like, okay, that looks about like what I thought it could look like heading into this year. So where's that been? They get another goal in the first period with Novak, a guy who hadn't scored since October the 22nd, finds his back of the net. You know, they were generating some pretty good looks. The play from Forsberg to Marchessault for his second goal of the game in the second period was beautiful. Like, it's a great play by Philip Forsberg on the backhand to get in the puck. So, you know, early in the game, you're like, okay, they're still not generating a ton of chances. But when they do, they're pretty good, and they're executing, making some high-level plays. And then from the Marchessault goal, basically until like the last minute of the game, they didn't do anything offensively. And how many times has that been the story this year, right? Where they just go through long stretches of the game, or sometimes like the entire game, without generating hardly anything offensively. And it just continues to boggle the mind. I mean, they lost Roman Josi after the first period last night, so obviously that's going to have an effect. But to go from, I thought, some pretty encouraging signs early in the game to just nothing in the second half of the game has been the story way too often this year.
Absolutely. And although they got off to a fast start, they still finished the game, to your point, with 20 shots on goal, which I believe is the third fewest in a game for the Predators this season. You look at some of the underlying numbers in this game, for example, in all situations. The Calgary Flames had a 16-8 advantage in high-danger scoring chances. We've talked so much about how the Predators have struggled to generate those types of chances to get to the slot with regularity after being so good at it last year. You know, to use the phrase that we've used a lot, it's mystifying, it's mind-boggling, whatever you want to describe it as. You know, this Predators season has fallen off of a cliff. To think that they have 7 wins in 29 games, it's just astounding. And at this point, you know, what else is there to accomplish? Barry Trotz, and we'll play some audio from Barry Trotz during his weekly interview with Jared Stillman. Some interesting comments there. But he said in a recent interview with Jared that he's going to give the team until Christmas.
Yeah.
And if things aren't going well by then, we may see a change in direction. I believe the Predators have 6 games between now and the Christmas break. So, I mean, I don't know what they can do to change Barry Trotz's mind in that aspect. If this slide continues, or if they lose most of those games, maybe they win 1 or 2. You know, when they get back from Christmas, are we looking at a roster that's filled with prospects and veteran players being scratched? I think that's probably the direction we're going in. And to say that this season has been a disappointment would be underselling it. Robbie, we've talked about this. We were on this program before the season laying out our best and worst case scenarios. And, you know, my worst case scenario was that Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault would take a little too long to adjust to their new surroundings, Brady Shea as well. The top line would regress after last season, and it would be a disappointing year. And all of those things have happened, but to an extent that I could not envision.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, by the way, since Barry Trotz made those comments, they've not won a game.
Yes. Right?
Like, they, you know, I can't imagine that's what he had in mind when he was talking about this. I mean, they were, you know, he talked about it yesterday with Stillman. I mean, they, and this is window dressing it a little bit, but they had points, I think, in 8 of 11 heading into the trip last week. Now, most of those were overtime losses, so it doesn't necessarily make you feel better at the end of it. But I guess the right way to say it is you had an opportunity if you could go on the road and get some wins in Canada where you could dig your way back into this thing. I think they were like 9 or 10 points out of a playoff spot at that time. You win some games, you hang around, you're able to dig your way back into it. And then maybe by Christmas, you've put together enough of a run here where you're, you know, 6 points out of a playoff spot. 6 points out of a playoff spot at Christmas is not ideal, but it's certainly a lot better than where they're at right now. And they haven't won since then. I mean, they've lost 8 games in a row. And I don't think that there's – I don't know if there's anything realistic they can do from now until Christmas to change the way this is going. I mean, you're now in a point where you're way too far into a hole. I mean, it's going to take an otherworldly run to get you out of this at this point. A run that I'm not sure is even really possible. To get yourself out of this at this point. I mean, you can bring up the, you know, the 2019 St. Louis Blues. You can bring up some, you know, the Edmonton team from last year. The Edmonton team from last year had pulled themselves out of it by this point. I mean, they had already fired the coach. They were doing, you know, making kind of that jump that you get when you do that. The St. Louis team, the difference in the second half of the year for them, the year they won the Cup, was they finally put a goalie in there that could make some saves. Like, Bennington made saves for him, and that's what the difference was. Like, Saros has not really been the problem for this team. The offense has been the problem all year long, and there's really little signs that that's changing anytime soon. So I don't know that there's really anything that they can do to pull themselves out of it by the time Barry Trotz is thrown out there.
An updated look at the Western Conference standings following last night's loss and before tonight's action. The Predators are 13 points back of the final wild card spot in the Western Conference, which is held by the Vancouver Canucks. By the way, the Canucks have 2 games in hand. SportLogic gives the Predators a 0.3% chance of making the playoffs. So yep. It's not 0.0, but it's 0.3. I mean, I think, to your point, Robbie, barring another 18-game point streak, and honestly, with where they are now, it may take a 20-game point streak, a 22-game point streak, yeah, something like that, which would be, you know, NHL record level. I mean, I think it's safe to say on December 11th, which is just it's tough to even say this, just considering what we thought this team was going to be. barring a miracle, on December 11th, this team is not making the playoffs this season.
Oh, yeah.
They're not making the playoffs. There are more than 50 games left in the season, and we can almost definitively say they are not going to make the playoffs. It is a disaster, and it's going to be really interesting over these next few months because they still have games to play. Look, for as much as we like to bag on the Titans, and they're out of the playoffs too. They've officially been eliminated from playoff contention. At least they only have 4 games left.
Yeah.
The Predators have 53, I believe, by my really quick math. That's a lot of games to play where there might not be much meaning in any of them.
Yeah.
And I want to know what the purpose of the remainder of the season is going to be. Is it going to be we're going to give Joachim Kimmel more opportunity or Reed Schaefer, and we've already seen Zachary LaRue and Fedor Svechkov? Are we going to see the Milwaukee Admirals basically become the Nashville Predators? Similarly to what we saw a couple of seasons ago, the season the Predators missed the playoffs after they sold off Ekholm and Janot and Granlund and Niederreiter. They also had a ton of injuries. Josi was hurt. Forsberg was hurt. Johansson was hurt. Duchesne was hurt. They were basically fielding an AHL team by the end of it. And to their credit, they almost made the playoffs, or at least stayed in the race until the very end. I'm wondering if that's what we're going to see in just a couple of weeks. If we believe Barry Trotz with this Christmas declaration, are we going to see a AHL level lineup by the time this team returns from the holidays? I mean, if this continues, I'm not sure how much choice you have.
Well, how do you do that? I mean, Stamkos, Marchessault, Forsberg.
Right.
None of those guys are going anywhere.
No.
Ryan O'Reilly, somebody trading for him right now? Maybe. Gus Nyquist, probably you could make that move. But the core of this team is here. Like, they're locked in. And you're asking about finding meaning the rest of the year. Like, this is not just a one-year problem. Like, you have to get this figured out, or you're staring at the same thing next year, right? Like, Stamkos, Marchessault, Forsberg, Josi, like, those guys have to be the solution, because with their contracts, with their money, they're not going with Brady Shea. Throw him in there too. Like, he's got to be a part of the solution. So you have to get that figured out to make next year's team functional. Like, this is now a multi-layered problem that they have, because I recognize they have some young guys that they're excited about, and maybe those guys can come in and can fill in the holes on the roster, and it looks different. But the bottom line to me is, I'm staring at it, Adam, is unless you get Marchessault, Stamkos, and Brady Shea, all these guys to figure it out, where's your path forward? Like, those guys are locked in. So that to me is what the rest of the year is about. You got to find some way to get those guys going. Otherwise, you're staring at the same thing next year.
Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We mentioned Barry Trotz. Every Tuesday, he sits down with Jared Stillman for a wide-ranging interview. I thought his interview yesterday was quite illuminating. We will play some of that and discuss what Barry Trotz has to say. Coming up next, Adam Vingan and Robbie Stanley, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan joined this week by Robbie Stanley. The Predators are back in action on Thursday evening. They're back out on the road to take on the Dallas Stars. Game time at 7, puck drop at 6, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. A lot of road games lately. They'll get some home cooking to enter the Christmas break. 4 consecutive home games starting next week against the Rangers, Penguins, Kings, and Hurricanes. But before yesterday's game, a 4-3 loss to the Calgary Flames, Barry Trotz joined Jared Stillman at Barrel House inside Bridgestone Arena. And I always like listening to these interviews, Robbie. I think Jared does a good job of getting right to the heart of the matter. He's got his finger on the pulse of the fan base. He is a Predators fan himself. despite how many of you might feel when he says certain things about your favorite teams. We know how passionate of a fan Jared is of the local teams. And most of the questions yesterday were about Andrew Burnett.
Yep.
And to Jared's credit, he kept trying to find different angles. He asked Barry up front about Andrew Burnett. When he didn't get the answer he wanted, he went through a different door. He tried many different ways to get an answer from Barry Trotz. But there was one question that Jared did ask of Barry Trotz that led to a really interesting answer. Jared asked that you have been, Barry, in that you being Barry, you have been steadfast in your support of Andrew Burnett. But if this thing continues to spiral, could that change? And this was Barry Trotz's response yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. That's not out of the question. I don't say will or won't, but I think you have to look at, it's my job to look at everything. The plan is, you know, no matter what, we got to salvage something of this year. It's got to be the process. And I've told the coaches, and it says just teach and preach, because you've got some good young players, you got some older players that got to find their game. So you got to keep teaching, you got to keep preaching the right stuff. You're not gonna bully them. It's not old school where you're gonna bully them to play. They're gonna play because they want to play, and they gotta come together. So I know there's a lot of people piling on, the team, the organization, the coach, whatever. That's the right. They have that right. But this group is there's a lot of good young men in there, and they're gonna do their best to come out of it, I'm sure. But nothing's off the table. I mean, when you're where we are, you know, be the coach, be the players, be whatever, everything's on the table. I have ownership to respond to. I have fans to respond to. I have organizational. But one thing that I'm not going to do is I'm not going to get away from the plan of we've got to get younger. We've got to get faster.
That was Barry Trotz yesterday talking about Andrew Burnett, because the calls for his firing are getting louder and louder around here. Now, I went on DVD last Tuesday and laid out my case as to why, if I were in charge, I would fire Andrew Burnett. Jared said on his show last Friday, after they lost to Montreal, that if they lost to Ottawa on Saturday, if he were in charge, he would fire Andrew Burnett. Gentry Estes in the Tennessean wrote a column suggesting the same thing. So, and we know how fans are. We see it on our text line. We hear it when you call into the station. We see it on social media. Andrew Burnett is public enemy number one right now among Nashville Predators fans. And Robbie, I know that Barry Trotz, and look, it's admirable that he is standing beside his coach. We've talked about this a lot. Barry Trotz knows more than probably any other general manager in the NHL what it is like to be in that position, considering he was in it for a very long time and he was very good at it. And I do admire Trotz's resolve. But when push comes to shove, if this season continues to spiral, I'm not sure he's going to be left with any choice.
Well, I think you hit it on the last part there. Like, there reaches a point in professional sports where you don't have a choice, right? Like, you have to shake something up. You have to make a move. And look, quite frankly, I think there are probably many places where it would have already happened at this point. I mean, we've seen coaches get fired this year. Chicago fired their coach last week. So we've seen that, particularly in this league, it happens quickly. Like, coaches get fired in this league more so really than any other league in, you know, the big four here in America, the NFL, NBA, MLB, and NHL. So, look, Burnett, I still stand by what I've said all along. I think Andrew Burnett is a good coach. I think he's displayed in his career that he's a good coach. He's doing a bad job this year. I mean, there's no other way to put it. They're 7-16-6. You know, Bill Parcells, you are what your record says you are. That's what the Predators are right now. That's the job that Andrew Burnett has done this year. And it's mystifying. I don't understand it. I couldn't begin to tell you why they are as bad offensively as they are, because I think that's the root cause of pretty much everything we're seeing. They cannot score. And when you can't score in this league, it's hard to keep up. But, I mean, you look at it, And it's clear that Barry Trotz believes in his guy. It's clear that Barry Trotz, and I talked about this morning, he was always going to be more patient with Andrew Brunette than others would have been, given the way that he came up through the ranks as a coach. David Poile was extremely patient with him when they were expansion franchise and they had to take their lumps early on. You know, he told a story in Jared's interview yesterday about how, you know, he almost got fired in 2004. And think about that. You know, you're talking 98 to 2004. That's a pretty long tenure by itself right there. And then he was here an additional 10 years after that. So he was here for a long time. And there was a lot of patience shown his way. So I've always felt that Barry Trotz was going to exercise every single opportunity to be patient with the coach until he can't be anymore. And the question is, how close are we to the you can't be anymore? They've lost 8 in a row. The playoffs are all but gone at this point. So how close are you to the point of no return? Some fans would say you should have been there already. Clearly he's not. How close are you in Barry Trotz's mind? Because ultimately that's really what matters, is Barry Trotz's decision here. Because I think Bill Haslam and ownership are going to give him the reign to make that decision.
You know, I personally would have already done it. I would have done it last week before they went on that road trip. You know, you've played 4 games since I said that. You've lost all of them. Those are precious points that you don't have. And I read Alex Daugherty's interview with Sean Henry in the Tennessean. Sean Henry speaks for Bill Haslam in the ownership group as, you know, as a proxy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could tell that Sean Henry, you know, speaking on behalf of the ownership group, they're all disappointed in what's gone on, but they did express faith that things can turn around. But, you know, the one thing that they all know, Sean Henry, Bill Haslam, all of the owners of the Predators, they're all successful business people. Yep. The reason why they are where they are is because they are successful business people. And successful business people know when they have a diminishing asset.
Yep.
And the Predators are in a place right now where they're not winning games. They're not scoring goals. Now, you were in the crowd. You know, you were there last night. I mean, was the crowd atypical of a Tuesday night game against Calgary?
It was as light as I've seen it in a while.
And that's the sort of thing that gets owners' attention. When fans stop coming to games, when the building is not as loud. I remember when they played the Avalanche in the playoffs a few years ago when they were swept out of the playoffs. You know, were all the butts in seats for games 3 and 4? I remember a pretty full crowd.
Yeah.
But they were nowhere near as loud as we have grown accustomed to when things were going well.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a telltale sign that consumer confidence in the product had started to diminish. And, you know, the last thing that you want to do as an owner is you don't want to reach a point where you can't get these fans back. And I think that as I said, they go on the road for 2 more, Thursday and Saturday. They're home for 4 games right before Christmas. If those 4 home games don't go well and the crowds are sparse and the team keeps losing, I mean, I'm no successful business person, but I can't imagine that would sit well with ownership.
No, I can't imagine it would sit well with ownership either. I guess here's the question I think that we're now moving into. I think the idea of firing Andrew Brunette to bring in a head coach that's going to give this team a bump that gets them back in the playoffs is becoming less and less realistic.
Yes, I would agree.
They could fire the coach today, and I don't know that that's going to give them some jolt that gets them back in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're probably too far gone at this point.
Yeah, it feels too far gone. So then the question becomes, all right, well, are you better served letting Brunette get this season to try to see if he can fix it moving forward, when knowing that if you fire the coach anyway right now, it's probably not going to get you back in the playoffs? Or do you try to work on your solution now So you're ready to go next season, and you can hopefully pick up where you would leave off this season, assuming that the new coach comes in and fixes things. I think that's now where we're getting to in that discussion of what is the benefit to doing it right now, and does that benefit outweigh, you know, potential problems that could come up in the course of a season that feels like it's pretty close to being lost anyway.
Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3, the game coming up next. I had an opportunity to go to morning skate yesterday. I asked Andrew Burnett a question. I found his answer to be quite interesting. We'll play that and we'll respond. Coming up next, Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here with you. The Predators back in action tomorrow night on the road against the Dallas Stars. We all have questions for Andrew Burnett. Perhaps 21 questions. Do you see what I did there, geezer? So yesterday, I had the opportunity to be at the arena for morning skate. And because the DVD program airs from 11 to 2, I don't have many opportunities to go to practice and be around the team. But on home game days, we broadcast live from Bridgestone Arena, which gives me an opportunity to do that. So I sat in on Andrew Burnett's morning skate news conference, and all three of us were there. We all thought it was a really interesting news conference. I remember Alex Daugherty and you, Robbie, said afterwards that that may have been his longest pregame news conference of the season. So one thing that I have harped on a lot is the fact that it looks like, and I emphasize that because I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, that it looks like Andrew Burnett is not holding his top players accountable for their performances. We've seen younger players in and out of the lineup. We've seen players waived or traded. Dante Fabbro, Philip Tomasino, Juuso Parsonen, Luke Evangelista, Michael McCarron. We've seen those players in and out of the lineup or taken off the team. But the top players who have struggled seem to have incredibly long leashes. And I understand that's part of sports. Star players are going to get more opportunities to screw up than role players. But Alex Daugherty opened the news conference asking about, hey, have you considered scratching any of your top players? And Burnett had a quote that made the rounds yesterday. I saw a lot of big graphics made by a couple of sites on Twitter saying, with Burnett saying, I could scratch anybody at this point with how poorly they've played. But I followed it up with a question about a perception of inequality between the role players and the star players. And I thought Brunette's response was interesting. This is Brunette's response.
Andrew, do you work in that situation? I understand that top players tend to have longer leashes than depth players, but do you worry about any sense of inequality? For example, I remember Mike McCarron had a turnover in a game against Edmonton back in October. That led to a goal by Leon Draisaitl, if I'm not mistaken, who scratched for a game or a couple games after that. Jonathan Marchessault has had multiple turnovers that I can recall, including in Montreal, that led to a shorthanded goal against, but yet he hasn't seen any reduction in his playing time. Do you worry about the inequality there?
I think you always worry. You know, I think players see it. Players see through a lot of different things. You know, with Marchie, I think you're trying to, you know, be patient with him. You're trying to make him feel comfortable. You're trying to find solutions for him because we're going to need him. You know, with Big Mac, yeah, I'm sure he looks at that saying, well, what happened to me? But Big Mac's game, I think he was minus 10 at the time too. And, you know, unfortunately, like I said, I could scratch every guy in the team. And is there going to come a time? There might. But I think with saying that, I think everybody wants to be held accountable. Everybody wants that, but they don't want when they don't like it when they're held accountable. And you know, that's where it gets tricky. And when you got a whole team that's probably not playing up to their capabilities or up to the expectations, it's easy to have that excuse. Well, how come he's not getting it? And my point to them is, how about you play better?
Short to the point at the end there.
He was.
Why don't you play better? So I thought that answer was interesting. And by the way, Jonathan Marchessault goes out and has two goals. Robbie Stanley.
Take some of that, Adam.
Robbie Stanley texts me last night and says, Jonathan Marchessault is telling you to pound sand. We don't hear Robbie say pound sand as much anymore. We need to bring that back. We need to make that a thing again. But I thought that answer was interesting because I think Brunette understands that there could be some of that feeling of inequality in the dressing room. And at this point, with Brunette, with his job seemingly safe for now, he's going to have to manage a dressing room full of egos. Athletes have egos, regardless of what level you play on the team. It's a delicate balance. I always liken a dressing room, a locker room, to like an ecosystem. You know, there you have to be very careful with how you handle it. So what did you make of his response to my question yesterday?
Well, it kind of falls in line of what I've kind of thought his approach was the whole time, which is he understands that in order to make this work, Marchessault, Stamkos, Brady Shea, they got to be a part of the answer. Like, they have to. I laid it out a couple segments ago. Not just this year, next couple years. They have to be a big part of this. Because if they're not, if they continue to struggle, then you're just not going to have a chance with the way that your roster and your contracts are currently structured. So I think he has tried to be as patient with them as humanly possible throughout this stretch. Now, having said that, Marchessault in particular has had some egregious turnovers this year. Some of those come on the power play. Some of them come at 5-on-5 that have not only led directly to scoring chances, they've led directly to pucks in the back of your net.
I can think of three.
Yeah.
There was the game in Edmonton. He made a pass by the bench.
Yeah.
That I believe was intercepted by Darnell Nurse, which led to Connor McDavid scoring his 1,000th NHL point.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure Jonathan Marchessault gets an assist on that play, but, you know, symbolically he does.
Wow.
The following night against the Calgary Flames,
yep.
It's 1-0. They pull the empty net. They pull the goalie. It's empty net. He's got the puck in the neutral zone looking to make a play. He backhands the puck, I think, directly to Blake Coleman, who I'm sure was shocked that the puck was hit right on his stick at center ice, puts it into the empty net, game over.
Yep.
So there goes that comeback opportunity. And then there was the game in Montreal. Turns it over on the power play. Jake Evans takes it the other way. Montreal scores. It's really been, you know, Marchessault, you know, Brady Shea struggles just in terms of the on-ice goals for and against have been there. But Marchessault's mistakes have been glaring because, as you said, Robbie, they've led to either dangerous scoring chances or goals against.
No doubt. So what's the balance there of being patient but maybe being too patient? I think that's been the question that you've tried to kind of thread the needle there. Look, in general, this is the way life works in professional sports and certainly NHL. Like, bottom line is, and I'm not comparing Jonathan Marchessault to Nathan MacKinnon, but this is the point I'm trying to make. Like, if Nathan MacKinnon makes a huge mistake in a brutal turnover, you know, he's probably not going to be held to the same punishment standard as name your fourth liner on Colorado, right? Like, if Philip Forsberg is trying to make a play and he ends up giving the puck away and it loses you the game the other way, probably not going to have the same consequence as Philip Tomasino. Forsberg has earned the right to work through that and play through that. So I think some of it's just that simple. Like, some of it is Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault is in their careers have earned the right to play through some of this stuff. I think some of it is Andrew Brunette realizes that they have to figure it out. Like, they, you know, guys like Michael McCarron, guys like Philip Tomasino, at least the way he was viewed by this organization, they knew that he was not going to be a part of their future. So guys that you know have to be part of your future, you got to let them work through things and figure things out. Now, should they have, at some point along the way here, sat Marchessault for a game? You could make that argument. I wouldn't have had a problem with that. Like, I think there is a certain thing is holding people accountable and sending a message. But his answer yesterday kind of confirmed what I thought all along, which is, and I mean, the guy used to be a player. He knows kind of that player-coach dynamic, and he's going to let these guys play through things.
And at this point, maybe it's with where the season is, that's what you have to do. But you know, we alluded to earlier, you know, bringing in some younger players. And look, there, as you said, Robbie, it's complicated with the salary cap situation and waiver status. It's not just easy to bring a guy up, pull a guy out. I understand there are going to be some challenges there, you know, but you know, I look at the performance of the top players. And like you mentioned, I thought the goals that top line scored last night, you know, we expected that all season long. Yep. Those were the types of plays we thought this team was going to make regularly. And it was good to see it, but it just feels like it's a little too late. But you know what? I appreciate Andrew Burnett being open about his process on that.
Yep.
He also answered questions about some of the changes he's made to his system in recent games. And he's a professional. I respect that about him. I don't know him too well, but you know, when people are calling for your head, including me,
yeah,
you know, you don't have to play nice. And he went up there and he answered the questions. I thought he handled it quite well yesterday. So I will give him credit for that. One thing we haven't mentioned, and we will do so quickly, is that Roman Josi didn't play in the second or third periods last night. He suffered a lower body injury. He played about 5.5 minutes last night. I don't recall the play in which it occurred, but he missed two periods. There was no update on him after the game. The Predators did not practice today,
yeah,
so we'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out. But considering you're already missing Ryan O'Reilly, you're already missing Alexander Carrier, missing Roman Josi, I mean, if he is out for any length of time,
it's a big problem.
That's a big problem.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. I mean, look, they quite frankly look lost on defense without him last night. I mean,
and Brady Shea played nearly 28 minutes last night after Roman Josi left the game.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Jim Diamond looked this up. I think Yossi's averaging 4.5 minutes of ice time more than the next closest, which I think is Brady Shea per game. So that kind of tells you how they're using him. Look, it's already in a rough spot with him. If they're without him, not only does that hurt you defensively, because it does, but like, think about what a big part of their offense he is.
Yeah.
A team that can't score, and he's their leading point.
Yeah, he's the engine.
He's the leading point producer. Like, what does the offense look like without him there right now? It's hard to think about.
It could get ugly, but we'll see what happens with Roman Josi. A lower body injury, left the game last night. No practice today, so no update. We'll see what happens tomorrow when the Predators take the ice in Dallas for morning skate. We'll wrap up the show, take a look at the week ahead. Coming up next, Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan and Robbie Stanley talking some Predators. It's been rough out there, folks. Stay strong. The Predators are back in action tomorrow night to start a two-game road trip, a two-game Central Division road trip. They are at the Dallas Stars on Thursday evening. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. The Predators then travel to Denver to take on the Colorado Avalanche on Saturday. Puck drop at 8, pregame at 7, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, before coming home for 4 home games to take us into the holiday break. So we're talking about how bad things can get, right? Let me throw this scenario at you. Dallas Stars, they beat the Calgary Flames on Sunday, I believe, 6-2. The Calgary Flames team that the Predators lost to last night. I'm going to make a prediction right now, Robbie.
Okay.
It's not going to sit well with Predators fans, but just with the way that this season is going, I'm just going to put it out there. Matt Duchene, at least 3 points against the Predators on Thursday.
Wow. How about that?
I think in this season where everything that could go wrong has gone wrong, I think Matt Duchene rubbing some salt in the wounds of the Predators, I think we're on tap for that.
I think you may get so excited after the second point that you won't be able to focus the rest of the time.
Look, and Matt Duchene has been great for the Stars.
He said all the right things last year. I can tell you, there's still a lot of animosity there between Duchene and the Nashville Predators.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him. And Duchesne has been a really valuable member of that team. And what's worked well for him is he's not the guy in Dallas like he was here or tried to be here. I always use the term miscast to describe Matt Duchesne's time in Nashville. He was miscast as a leading man. He's more of a supporting actor, to use the Oscar terminology. Mm. I don't know why I went down that road. But anyway, so we're looking at this upcoming schedule. You know, the Predators had some opportunities to pick up points against teams that were languishing in the standings, just like them. Montreal, didn't happen. Ottawa, didn't happen. You know, Calgary's been better than expected, but last night was their first road win in like a month.
They lost 8 straight on the road. They lost 6 of 7 overall. I mean, they're fading quickly.
Right. So they haven't been going well either, but the Predators helped them break that streak. They're going to play the Kings next week. They're 7th in the NHL.
Yeah.
They're going to play the Carolina Hurricanes. I think that's their last game before Christmas. They're 8th in the NHL. They're about to play the Dallas Stars. They're 10th in the NHL. They're about to play the Colorado Avalanche. They're 12th in the NHL.
Yeah.
I mean, the Rangers are down bad right now. I believe they've lost 8 of 10 in regulation. It's not going well there. And the Pittsburgh Penguins have been up and down all season. But you're about to play some really tough teams. Like, the way things are going, this stretch could get ugly. If you didn't think it was ugly already, it could get ugly.
Well, based on the way they're playing right now, I mean, you could look at any game and think it could be ugly, right? I mean, they just lost. You just laid it out. They lost to Ottawa, Montreal, and Calgary. I mean, if you're not picking up wins against those three teams right now in the standings, I mean, you worry to death about everybody else. Now, look, I mean, they're eventually going to win a hockey game again.
Are you sure?
Yeah, like they're eventually going to win, and there will be some times this year where they beat some teams that are pretty darn good. You know, so it's going to happen at some point. But your point remains, like, looking ahead at the rest of the schedule before Christmas, there could be a lot of losses on the table, right? Like, one question I think is fair to ask, are they getting to 10 wins before the Christmas break? Or it's 7 right now. They've been stuck on 7 for a long time.
It's been a couple weeks.
They getting to 10 before Christmas comes around? Like, I don't know. And then you're talking about you're into the 30s at that point in terms of games played. And if you haven't crossed the double-digit win mark by the time you get into, like, the mid-30s of games played, like, you start talking about number one overall pick at that point, right? Like, I know it's a lottery system and nothing's guaranteed, but that's the territory that you're in right now. That's the territory that you kind of feel destined for at that point if you can't turn things around by then. So, I mean, it's almost laughable at this point to say there's some crucial games coming up because, you know, the math is what it is. Like, the math would tell you that it's going to be unbelievably difficult for them to dig their way out of this and get back into a playoff stretch here. But at some point, like, you got to start putting together some games that you feel good about and have some positive mojo, at least in the offensive zone, which continues to be equally with the record this year, Adam. The most mind-boggling thing to me is just how inept they look offensively.
Yeah, it hasn't been good. It really hasn't. And remember, when Andrew Brunette took over the Florida Panthers a few years ago when Joel Quenneville resigned, I believe they were 7-0 when he resigned. So it was a good team, and that team won the President's Trophy. That team was the highest-scoring team, I believe, in the salary cap era,
yes,
like single season in terms of goals per game. I want to
over
say they averaged 4 goals per game, right?
Yeah.
And that, look, that was an immensely talented team with Sasha Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau, who we saw here last night. And
but you don't come in as like a coach that has no idea what he's doing, and that ends up being the case.
Right, exactly. So, look, it's the Predators are at a crossroads. As we've laid out, it's going to be hard for them to make seismic changes. We've seen them nibble around the edges by trading Philip Tomasino and Scott Wedgwood, who, by the way, insult to injury, Matt Duchesne with a big night against the Predators on Thursday. What if Scott Wedgwood starts and shuts out the Predators on Saturday?
Wedgie, knew you around here.
Yeah. As I said to Keyser last week, I hope he didn't buy, which Keyser said apparently he did. So, I guess you could turn it into an Airbnb.
Sure.
But I mean, it's a really interesting time around here. We're going to learn a lot about Barry Trotz over these next few weeks and really over the coming months. You know, if he has, he's shown he's not afraid of making the hard decision, and he may have to make some hard decisions he wasn't planning on making if this season continues to head off the rails. Robbie, always a pleasure, my friend, to be here with you. Thanks for talking hockey. You know, there isn't a lot positive to talk about, but people still want to hear it. And that's why we're here for you. So we appreciate you, Robbie.
Thank you. I appreciate you, Adam.
And just a programming note, Preds Insiders is taking a holiday hiatus. So there will not be another episode this calendar year. We will resume the program in January. We hope by then the Predators have won some hockey games. We never know. But we'll see what happens over these next few weeks. It's going to be a really interesting time here in Nashville for the local professional hockey team. And I look forward to being back with you in January to break it all down. For Robbie Stanley and Nick Heiser, this is Adam Vingan. You've been listening to Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3 The Game.